Quantum Jones, here he is, synthetic life. You know, I don't know. There are people who are trying to synthesize life today in the labs, and I don't know whether they're using quantum physics, but maybe they should be.
Well, thanks to the people who are never in one place while helping us produce the show. Senior producer Gary Niederhoff, operations manager Barbara Vance, and intern Sarah McQuaid.
Thanks also to financial support from Rena Shulsky David and Sammy David, and to the William K. Bowes Jr. Foundation. Big Picture Science is produced at the SETI Institute, a nonprofit scientific and education organization whose scientists study the origin and nature of life, including investigating habitable worlds in our solar system. And a big thanks also to our listeners.
Your ears have been attuned to Quantum, Why We Want Them. If you'd like to hear more Big Picture Science episodes, well, you'll find them in our archive at bigpicturescience.org and also now on YouTube.
And if you're a podcast listener but prefer listening to over-the-air radio, because who knows which path those radio quanta took to reach you, check out the listing on our website of radio stations that carry the program. And if your local station is not on that list, consider letting them know you like the show.
And if you listen to our show via iTunes, we invite you to leave a review on our iTunes page. And to reach us directly with your comments, throw in faint praise, email it all to bigpicturescience@seti.org.
WHFR, Dearborn.
You don't have to. Thank you.
Good afternoon and welcome to Impact, the show about individuals and groups making a positive difference in the community. The views and opinions expressed on Impact are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio nor Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn. Hi, I'm your host Lynn, and today we're discussing all things related to that emergency health when you call 911. Who comes to see you? It's a paramedic, and our paramedic today is Dan Collier. Dan, thanks so much for being here. I'm sorry?
Ken Collier.
Why did I write down Dan? This is we're off to one heck of a start here. Ken Collier. And Ken, thanks so much for coming in and talking to us about all things paramedic. You guys perform miracles on a daily basis. Tell us about your background and how you are how you became interested in becoming a paramedic.
Well, thank you for having me. Happy Valentine's Day. We don't really perform miracles. We follow an established set of protocols, and we have doctors on the other end of the radio that can help us if necessary. You know, we can radio in and talk to the doctor at the hospital, and he can tell us what to do. We tell him what we've got, and he can tell us what he wants us to do other than just follow protocol. But how I got started was when I was in middle school and through high school, and when I first started college, which was here at Henry Ford. There was a television show on called Emergency, which was based on the type of emergency rescue that they do in Los Angeles by the Los Angeles Fire Department. And also, 1974, when I was in high school, Michigan was in its infancy regarding EMS and the emergency rescue in the pre-hospital setting. And it was 1974 that they passed a law which stated that each ambulance must have one licensed basic emergency medical technician in the ambulance. And that, if you only had one, that's the person that had to be in the back with the patient. Until then, people were free to do whatever they wanted to do. If you wanted to run your own ambulance service, you could do that because there was no regulations until 1974.
So no licensing then?
No.
Per se? Okay.
No, not at all. That changed in 1974. 1979, the show went out of production after having been on for 7 years, but I saw four times I've seen Randy Mantooth in person, who played John Gage, firefighter paramedic John Gage, on the show. Once I saw him in a play in Chelsea. The other three times, it's when he was invited to speak at various different events. And one of the things he mentioned was that when the show was in production, when they would do public appearances for things like parades, they had people asking them, you know, how can we get this in our community? And they had to remind them we're actors, not paramedics, mm-hmm. so they didn't really know. But the television show Emergency is what got the ball rolling, and that's what got people asking, you know, if they can do that in Los Angeles, why can't we do it in our community? Why can't we have that available in our community?
Sure.
So
now that you've been a paramedic for a number of years.
Mm-hmm. 28.
Wow. How do you now look back at the show? Is the show accurate?
It was for the time period, which was the 1970s, but a lot has changed over the years.
Okay.
So the basic principle is still the same, where you're bringing as much as possible, the emergency room to the patient, rather than waiting to take the patient to the emergency room, which of course takes a lot longer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you bring as much of the emergency room as you can right to the patient in the pre-hospital setting, which can make a difference in a lot of situations.
Right.
So,
okay.
So here in Michigan, in this area, it wasn't until 3 years after the show went out of production in 1982 that we first started to see what we were seeing on the show here available in the pre-hospital setting. That's what sparked my interest, television show. So
yeah.
I feel whenever you see someone that had anything to do with the television show Emergency, you want to say thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
At one of the speaking events, when time came for asking questions, instead of asking a question, I just stepped up to the microphone and I said to Randy Mantooth, you know, I want to thank you for, you know, the television show Emergency, because that is, you know, what got the ball rolling for what we have available today. And, you know, and I said, I'm a paramedic, and he didn't say anything. So I would imagine it's probably because he's tired of hearing that. I'm speculating. That's probably mm-hmm. why. But,
wow.
You know, he still travels around the country and speaks, different public events and, you know, promoting EMS in the pre-hospital setting.
Wow. So. Is there a lot of old television shows, movies, what have you, have clubs where people follow, the actors follow what's going on mm-hmm. and relive some of the moments from the shows? Does Emergency have a club like that, or is it more informal?
I don't think they have a club. They do. Randy Mantooth does have a website. You can go on I don't know exactly where, but it's Emergency bloopers from the show are shown on this. I've seen it before. I can't remember where it's at, but it's on one of the websites.
Okay.
Where you can see the bloopers.
Okay.
Not for children, because some of the language in those bloopers is just unbelievable. I was told Randy Mantooth actually said Julie London was, I don't know how to put it, but her vocabulary was very salty.
Oh,
and,
okay.
A lot of these bloopers, she's using the most unbelievable language.
thinking that they can just snip it out.
Well, that's what they would have had to do, because,
right.
You know, they would have had to edit that out. There's, you know.
Wow.
One I was watching where she cursed, and Bob Fuller, who played Dr. Brackett, is off camera, and he's just continuing with his line, and she says, "We can't go on. I just said," and she repeated mm-hmm. the obscenity.
Mm-hmm.
So,
in case you didn't get it the first time.
Yeah, exactly, exactly, exactly.
Oh, that's funny.
So
okay. So getting back to your experience, who all is in the rig? When you go, if I call 911 and mm-hmm. I say, I think I just had a heart attack or what have you, I generally see that the fire engine and the mm-hmm. EMS shows up at the same time.
It depends upon where you live. Some areas, fire responds by themselves with a fire truck and an ambulance. other areas, EMS responds, the private duty EMS responds by themselves. Other communities, you have private EMS and the fire department co-responding. So it depends upon where you live.
Okay. Right?
Here in Dearborn, for example, the fire department does all of the rescue. So you might get an ambulance with two firefighter paramedics, or you might get an ambulance and a fire truck with more firefighters to assist. It depends upon what the situation is, what the type of call is.
Okay. Right. And why do I need the fire truck?
Various different reasons. If you're on the most often reason would be if you're on the scene of an accident, there's a fire, you know, you got to put that fire out right away. Carrying people is another reason you would need extra hands. You know, upstairs, getting somebody out of a car if they're jammed in there, you've got to get the extrication tools off the fire truck and pry the car open to be able to get the person out. And if the person is seriously injured, you know, time is not on your side, so you got to have as much help as possible to get that done expediently.
And then I guess you'd have the classic breaking down the door of a house.
I've been on scene a few times where the door was locked and the only choice was to kick the door in, so, or use pry tools to get it open. So that has happened. I've had that happen before.
Wow. And it, you're right. Seconds count.
Yes.
In all these.
Yes, absolutely.
Stroke situations, heart attacks, what have you. What all, I just mentioned too, what else do you help with trying to get a head start before somebody gets to the hospital?
Well, there's numerous things we do depending upon what the situation is. Give patients oxygen, start an IV, put them on the heart monitor, do a 12-lead EKG. We have various different medications we give depending upon what the situation is. If they're not breathing or they're not breathing well enough, we have different types of tubes we can put down into the airway and breathe for the person.
Okay. So you mentioned the EKG. So you're actually running some tests in transit so that...
That or on scene.
Right.
Yeah, so we do a 12-lead EKG either on scene or en route to the hospital.
Okay. Which, and that gives the hospital a head start.
Yes, it does. Especially with the modern technology we have nowadays, a lot of the systems have the setup where they can run the 12-lead EKG and then send it over the airway to the hospital. So the patient's EKG is at the hospital before the patient gets there. So the doctor can look at it before the patient even gets there.
Okay. That's fantastic.
Yeah, it is. Very much so.
Any stats on the difference between then and now? You talked about the difference in licensing and the different types of protocol that we have now as opposed to what we had back in the 70s or what have you. Any kind of stats as to how many lives are saved percentage-wise from the old days?
I really don't know the stats, but you know, obviously things have improved greatly now that there's, you know,
more
regulations and licensing requirements, and you know, not just for the paramedics and the EMTs, but for the vehicles and for the equipment, specific regulations that require what must be on an ambulance. And,
All right. Give us some examples of things that you have to have before you head out.
We have to have onboard oxygen. We have to have portable oxygen. We have to have backboards for people with spinal injuries. We have to have certain type of splints. On a advanced life support ambulance, we have to have a heart monitor with EKG capability. We have to have the advanced airway equipment, IV supplies, the medications, you know, that we administer in the pre-hospital setting.
What kind of medications do you know to administer? And tell us about the background of a paramedic to know what to use.
Oh, you go through your paramedic training, and part of that is pharmacology, where you learn the medications that are used in the pre-hospital setting. You know, as you go through your paramedic training, you need to learn the dosages and what the medication does, how it affects the body, how you give it, when you give it, for what condition do you give it for, things like that.
Okay. All right. Tell us some. You have to have interesting life stories in that business. Every business has. I have a relatively boring job, and I have some really interesting stories about people who have come into the office and what have you. But this is. I mean, you're right there with humanity. Mm-hmm. Tell us about some of your favorite stories, whether good or bad.
Well, the worst situation I've ever had. When I do presentations for school classrooms, young people always ask pretty much the same question: what's the worst thing you've ever seen? Because they want to hear about the gore and
sure.
all that. When I first started as a basic EMT, I was running with a volunteer service. And one morning, I pulled up to the bay doors. Actually, before I did that, I noticed flashing lights down the road. So I pulled up to the bay doors. I was supposed to be there at 8 o'clock, and it was just before 8 o'clock when my shift started. I noticed both the ambulances were gone, so I just turned my car around and headed toward the flashing lights. And I, excuse me, I headed toward the flashing lights. I parked my car as close as I could, and I ran across the street, and I asked the other people that were already on scene, you know, what do you want me to do to help you? What can I do to help you? So I wound up participating in a call that was already in progress.
Mm-hmm.
What had happened was there was a man taking his car to have the front end aligned, I think it was. There was another car coming the opposite way behind a bus that had three high school seniors in it that went to school in that community. They were on their way to school, and there was a bus stopped on the road in front of them, so the teenager that was driving the car decided to go around the bus. He then hit the other car head-on of the man that was on the way to take his car in for front-end alignment. These three teenagers were all on the football team. They were well-liked, popular students.
Mm-hmm.
It was early September, it was about mid-September, so school had just started, you know, football season was just underway. One of them was too badly injured. We couldn't do anything for him. He was dead on scene. Another one we did CPR on and took him to the hospital. The one that was driving the car was conscious, so we loaded him and took him to the hospital. Another ambulance came and took the man in the other car to the hospital. So out of the four that were injured in the accident, the one that was driving, the teenage boy that was driving the car that caused the accident, was the only one that survived. The other three all died. One we did CPR on, we did CPR all the way to the hospital on him, and they worked on him when we got there. He did not survive. The boy that was laying on the ground that was too badly injured that we couldn't do anything for, he was dead on scene. And then the gentleman that was driving the car that was going to get his front end aligned, he bled to death in the emergency room. So all three of the four that were involved in the accident, three of them did not survive. So,
wow.
When I was doing a presentation several years later for a group of middle school students that was in that same community, they asked, of course, to ask that question, what's the worst thing you've ever seen?
Mm-hmm.
So I told them about that accident. The teacher was in the back of the room, and I told the class three out of four did not survive, two of them being, you know, high school seniors right here in this community. And the teacher was in the back of the room. He spoke up and said, yeah, and one of them was my best friend. So then several years later, my brother married a young lady that lived in that community. Come to find out, she, her two sisters, and brother-in-law had all been students there at the time that that happened, so they knew the boys that that didn't survive. They knew the two high school seniors that did not survive.
Yeah.
And then, tragically, the one that did survive, the other students, you know, wouldn't let up on him after that. After that happened, so they blamed him for the death of the other two students. So he had to transfer to another high school to finish his senior year.
Wow.
So that's the worst thing I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what's interesting about the story is sometimes we think that it's just a simple car accident or what have you, and, mm-hmm. and okay, two people passed away during that tragic event. But that's not the end of it.
No, it isn't.
It moves, in this case, it moved throughout the entire school,
mm-hmm.
Impacts the entire community.
Absolutely,
and,
it sure did.
What kind of driving advice do you have for people?
the worst thing that's happening right now that I see is people who are running red lights or they're sitting waiting to make a left turn and the light goes red and they still make that left turn anyway right through the intersection, because intersections are the worst place for accidents. That's where we see the most most accidents happening, is in intersections. You know, people don't want to pay attention to the red light, and you can't do that.
Right.
The light's red, you got to stop.
Yeah, yeah.
No ifs, ands, or buts.
Wow. So belting, have you seen the difference between using seat belts and not using
seat belts? Absolutely, absolutely.
Okay.
Oh, yes. I was on another call several years ago. We had a semi-truck on its side, and the driver was laying out on the ground because he had flown through the windshield.
Oof.
Reason, no seat belt.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was dead on scene. There's nothing mm-hmm. we could do for him, but, you know.
Wow.
And I've seen where seat belts make a major difference in car seats. You know, I've been on accident scenes where, you know, there was a baby in a car seat that was properly strapped in and mm-hmm. not a scratch on him.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because mom and dad took the time to properly secure them into the baby seat and into
right.
the car.
Right.
So, though, you know, seat belts save lives, car seats save lives, especially when they're used correctly. You know.
Okay. Let's move on to a happier note. There have to be good stories. Have you delivered a baby on
yes.
the roadside?
Oh, yes. I have delivered three babies. The first time, my first field delivery, I was a nervous wreck. One of the firefighters put his hands on my shoulders and told me to calm down. That's how nervous I was. This lady was about to deliver her fourth child. The midwife was on the way because she had planned on having the baby at home. But the midwife didn't get there in time, so EMS was called, and she gave birth on her living room floor. And
okay.
just as we were about to load her and the baby into the ambulance, that's when the midwife got there, so her services weren't needed. We transported to the hospital. Two other times I've had babies deliver in the back of the ambulance. The second delivery I did, we were on the street in front of the hospital and the baby's head popped out, so I hollered for my partner to pull over and stop, because you cannot deliver a baby in a moving vehicle. It's very dangerous.
Sure.
You know, the baby's slippery when they come out,
right.
and you can easily drop them, so... Trying to deliver in a moving vehicle is something you never want to do. If
only
the baby's
in the
delivering, the baby's delivering, you got to pull over and stop. So
right.
that's what we did. After we got the baby and the mother upstairs to the OB department.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it was the baby's grandfather. I don't know if it was her father or her husband's father, but he took a picture of me holding the baby. Then the third one, we were backing in. We made it all the way to the hospital. We were backing into the ambulance bay, and the baby's head popped out just as we were backing in. So had to complete the delivery in the back of the ambulance. Fortunately, though, there were people that had come down from the OB department for that third one, so I was able to just hand the baby out the back door to one of the nurses, and she put the baby in a bassinet on wheels that they had standing by, and they took the baby upstairs, and all we had to do was take mom upstairs.
So right.
I have had those three experiences where I've delivered babies. You know, that's one of the few happy occasions we see in EMS when we get to watch a new life come into the world.
Yeah, and the baby's kind of calling the shots at this point, too.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Oh, yeah, when it's time, it's time. There's no turning that around. There's no putting the brakes on that.
Right.
If the baby's on the way, the baby's on the way.
Oh, my gosh.
And there's no turning that around.
Mm-hmm.
When it's time to be born, it's time to be born, and that's it.
Yeah. And you mentioned making presentations at various schools, different ages, I take it?
I've done high school, I've done middle school, I've done elementary school, so I've done all ages.
Any questions that were just absolutely hilarious for you or stumped you in some way?
No, not really, not really. Usually the girls will ask, can girls be a paramedic? And the answer is yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Almost always I get the question about what's the goriest thing or what's the worst thing you've ever seen.
Sure.
If they want to hear about the gore.
Yeah. Little kids, like grade school kids, tend to have, whatever enters the mind just comes out of the mouth. And so I was just wondering if anything.
Not that I can think of.
Okay. They can be pretty creative thinkers.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Very much so.
What's the favorite part of your day or your routine?
I don't know if I have a specific part of the day when it happens, but when we've done something for someone, knowing that we either saved their life or turn their condition around to the positive, that's what makes it all worthwhile.
Has to
absolutely
be. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What do you do when you're not on call?
We have cover points where we sit. Dispatch will tell us go to such and such a location, and then we just sit there until we're needed somewhere for a call.
Okay.
Then as long as you stay within about a mile of your assigned area, you can go get lunch. You can, as long as you're available to respond right away, you can go do different things. As long as you're not too far away from the ambulance.
Right.
You can get in and take off quickly.
Yeah. Sometimes things happen in the middle of a crowd. We played Regina Carter before. I always think about jazz, like Jazz Fest. You have so many people. Mm-hmm. And anything can happen at any time. And I'm not talking about a bad thing, although that can happen too, like a knife wound or a gunshot or something like that in the middle of a crowd. But somebody could just have a heart attack or a panic attack or an asthma attack, serious asthma attack, that kind of thing, where they need... How do you get through? How do you maneuver through the crowd, whether it's with the rig or just on foot?
If we're on foot, we have the gurney, and that kind of lets people know, we're on the way to get somebody, so please let us through. Most people, when they see the gurney, will step out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
But getting through a large crowd is difficult because you've got so many bodies.
Sure.
When you're coming through with the ambulance, you got to be more careful because you don't want to run into anybody, of course. You just come through slowly with the lights flashing and people get the idea, oh, here comes an ambulance. We need to step aside. So
hopefully.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
One of my personal favorite stories was a woman, this is right downtown on Griswold, between the bank building and the Penobscot building, and EMS was trying to make a U-turn, and she was just very, very upset that this vehicle was getting in her way.
Yeah, some people are like that. They do not want to get out of the way. Like I mentioned to you before, my grandpa used to call people like that, they own the road. He used to say they own the road.
Sure,
Because there's people, they have no intention of getting out of the way. They just don't care.
And, crazy.
To people like that, I have to ask, what how would it be if that ambulance was needed for you or for somebody in your family, you know, and you're
exactly.
not making any effort to get out of the way.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. What event that you've been part of, either working, observing, do you feel has changed your life, that's changed where you were before the event and then after the event?
That's a tough one.
Well, you've had a lot of experiences.
Yes, I have. Well, there was one call I had several years ago. We had a total of seven victims. It was a car accident. I don't know how. The guy had a heart attack while he was driving or whatever, but he was driving his car, ran into a van that had a lady and five children. So we wound up with multiple ambulances on that scene. We wound up calling a helicopter, but miraculously every person survived, including the guy who was driving the car that ran into the van, because he was in full cardiac arrest. His heart was totally stopped. He was in cardiac arrest, but with everyone working together, we managed to save everyone, including the guy whose heart had stopped. So that was.
That's fantastic.
That's the one that sticks out in my mind as being. I don't know what exactly I would call that, but one that says, "Hey, we can make a difference, you know."
Yeah, you do make a difference.
With what we do.
Yeah, wow. Mm-hmm. Wow. Being Valentine's Day, I wanted to talk a little bit about heart.
Okay.
And so we have a situation where something's not right, and we call 911. It's mm-hmm. still going to take you at least a couple minutes to get there.
Yes.
What should someone do if they feel their the pressure in the chest or the back? Because women... display symptoms differently from men, so it's not the classic down the left arm and all that business.
A lot of times with women, we're not seeing any pain. Sometimes it'll just be a sudden onset of weakness or something along that line. So they're not thinking it could be a heart attack, and it very well could be.
Mm-hmm.
You have to keep in mind there's a broad range of signs and symptoms that can happen, which might not seem to be a heart attack, but actually are.
Mm-hmm.
And pain is a lot of times not happening, but the person is still having a heart attack. You know, we call that a silent heart attack.
Okay.
Because there's no pain, but the person is still having a heart attack.
Sure.
If you are having chest pain or any type of symptom that could be related to a heart attack, you know, sudden onset of weakness, nausea, trouble breathing, you need to get to an emergency room immediately. Never try driving yourself. Call 911 and get to a hospital emergency room as soon as you can.
Should we take an aspirin if we feel
something? Yes.
Okay.
Yes, they do advertise that. Aspirin is a blood thinner,
mm-hmm.
and that will help with the circulation if you're having a heart attack.
I used to work with a person who was stubborn. I think that's probably the best way to describe him.
Mm-hmm.
And he felt something. He felt the symptoms of a heart attack. Took two aspirin, and did drive himself to the hospital.
Major mistake. You could lose consciousness while you're driving. Your heart could stop while you're driving.
Right.
Not only are you harming yourself, but the other people on the road that
right.
your car is going to run into because you
sure.
no longer have control.
Yeah.
Control of that car. So,
and it was a heart attack.
Yeah,
and everything, it had a happy ending. He lived for a number of years after that. Yeah. It was the right thing to do so far as taking the aspirin anyway.
Yes.
But, wow. Yeah, I know. I heard... the story where he drove himself to the hospital.
That's a major mistake. Major mistake. you know, if you think you're having a heart attack, for whatever reason, call 911. Let help come to you. You know, make sure your door's unlocked or have somebody else unlock it so that mm-hmm. help can get to you quickly.
Sure, sure. Does the dispatcher stay on the telephone with you until EMS gets there?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. I mean, I would think so, but...
Especially if you're by yourself, yeah.
Sure. Okay. All right. Okay. Any other advice that you'd have for us so far as, you know, whatever's going on? I cut myself in the kitchen. Somebody fell out of a tree. Somebody fell off the roof thinking they could do their own home repairs. You know, that kind of, I know you've seen it all.
I've seen it all, but I've seen a lot. You
know. What would you recommend we do to promote a little bit of self-care other than the heart attack and the aspirin? Should we attempt a tourniquet?
If you've been properly trained in how to do one, yes. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, no.
Okay.
Don't do anything you're not properly trained for. Don't try to do anything you're not properly trained for. Number one thing to do is somebody get to a phone and get emergency help on the way as soon as possible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't want to delay that.
Right.
The longer it takes to call, the longer it takes to get help to right. the person that needs help.
Okay.
People driving, one major way you can help is when an emergency vehicle is coming up behind you with the lights flashing, you pull over to the right, you know, and let them pass you on your left side, your driver's side. That's one major thing people can do out on the road to help.
Okay.
Even though the ambulance is not coming for you, it's on the way for somebody, or the police car or the fire truck. Their lights are flashing, they're on their way to some type of emergency situation. So I've had people slam on the brakes in front of us. I've had people pull in front of us and then slam on the brakes, and that's making situation a lot worse and could cause an accident, you know. And,
of course.
And now you've got another emergency situation, and that prevents help getting to the person that emergency vehicle was on their way for in the first place, because
right.
that just delays getting help to that person, because now another ambulance has got to be dispatched, or another police car or fire truck.
Right. How many patients can you put in what I perceive to be a standard EMS rig?
Laying down two, one on the gurney and one on the bench, which is right across from the gurney.
Okay.
If you've got a lot of people you've got to transport and one of them can sit up, you can put a third one in the seat that's right behind the, right up at the head of the gurney.
Okay.
So, but laying down, we can only take two at a time.
Okay. All right. One of the things that always enters into kind of any kind of medical discussion from the time of the early 80s forward is your risk of dealing with somebody who has something like AIDS or, mm-hmm. you know, some other dangerous, I guess would be the correct word, disease.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you're gloved.
Yes.
If somebody is unconscious, they can't tell you if they have one of these dangerous conditions.
Mm-hmm.
How do you protect yourself? How do you handle that yourself?
We always have gloves on before we touch anybody, or try to remember to put gloves on before you touch anybody. Sometimes if it's a situation where you've got a lot of body fluid, like blood or somebody's throwing up, you can put on two pairs of gloves. For added protection. For communicable diseases, we do have face masks that we can put on while we're in the ambulance. We do have eye shields.
Mm-hmm.
So, we have personal protective gear that is disposable. And then we have red bags, plastic bags that goes in. That can be taken care of immediately, and people know when they see the red bag that that's hazardous material.
Okay.
And then when we get to the hospital, they have the emergency rooms have what's called a dirty utility room, They have large red bins, plastic bins in there where you can put those plastic bags in. And has a top that's snap shut on top of it, so that, you know, that takes care of anything hazardous.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So it stops it from potentially going out into the air.
Yes.
And spreading that way. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. I had never heard about that before. So that's, the rules changed again from the time of emergency. 70s were pretty peaceful compared to the 80s when we had the explosion of AIDS and SARS and some of the other diseases that came out there.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Okay. All right. Let's see. What if somebody is, you show up at a home and obviously someone needs care, someone needs your care, mm-hmm. and there's a family member or a spouse or somebody who's absolutely hostile to the whole situation of having you there. How do you handle that? There's more than one of you, take it.
Yeah, and so at least two of us.
Somebody, you're attending to the person, the victim, if you mm-hmm. will, and somebody else is trying to calm down the other individual?
Yes. the other person will try to calm that person down. If that's not possible or it's not working, then we call for police and let them deal with it. Then we get, once police are on scene, they can take care of keeping the other person back out of the way, and then we can take care of the patient.
Okay. All right. Kind of in a like question would be, if you feel that you have now stumbled upon some sort of a crime scene, whether someone has been hit, beaten, mm-hmm. knifed, knife wound, gunshot wound, something like that, and so you have the perpetrator of the crime and you have the victim, and for whatever reason somebody decided to call 911, mm-hmm. Immediately you're calling the police, I take it.
Oh, yes.
But you're in a whole lot of danger at that point.
That's possible. If you have any reason to suspect you don't have a safe scene, you just stay back until the police get there, and they go in ahead of us. They go in first.
Okay.
If you're responding to a gunshot wound or a knifing, question number one, where's the person with the gun or where's the person with the knife?
Of course.
You know, and so PD goes in first, police goes in first ahead of us. Mm-hmm. And then when they tell us scene is secure, then we go in.
Wow. And we talked very early on, we talked about the importance of seconds in helping the person who's wounded.
Yes.
Or ill. And wow.
Yeah. Yeah. That
puts you in a bad situation.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Talk about people or person through, you said you've been doing this for 28 years now.
Yeah, well, I've been a paramedic for 28 years. I've been in EMS for 34 years.
Okay, so that's a long time. A lot of experience, a lot of stories.
Time has gone by quickly.
And I want to get back to some of that, but tell me if there's an individual or maybe a couple individuals who made a lasting impression on your life. Because this is pretty much a happenstance. Uh-huh. It's unusual that you're going to meet some of these folks. It is what it is when that 911 call comes in.
Well, sometimes you come across people who know someone famous or are related to someone famous.
Okay.
A couple years ago, I had the nephew of who was the prosecuting attorney in the O.J. Simpson case. Chris Darden. I had his nephew mm-hmm. as a patient.
So, okay.
And if you remember the singer Selena,
mm-hmm.
that was unfortunately murdered.
Right.
About. 18, 19 years ago now. I had a patient who was a retired studio musician from Corpus Christi, Texas, and he knew Selena and knew her family.
Wow.
Yeah, so I was talking talking to him for a while about that and about Selena and
sure.
About the situation. And
yeah.
He's the one that told me that her husband had written a book about the situation, about her and about the situation. So I went and got the book. I have that at home.
Okay. All right.
Made for some interesting reading.
I'll bet.
Yeah, I think it had been 17 years since her murder, and they had asked him repeatedly, and he finally wrote the book 17 years later. He says that at the beginning of the book, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, after being asked, you know, over the last 17 years, I finally said, okay, I'll write the book. I'll write a book. So, you know, that's probably been most interesting things that I've had happen where
yeah.
I, you know, come in contact with somebody who knew somebody famous or was related to somebody famous.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right. And then one situation I think is probably number one was I was working in an emergency room several years ago, and I was working midnights, and this guy wheels a lady in that's unresponsive in a wheelchair, and he brings her into triage, which is the area where patients are first screened
mm-hmm.
for severity of illness or injury. The nurse realized that she didn't have a pulse, you know, so she wasn't, or noticed that she wasn't breathing and checked and discovered that she did not have a pulse, rather, so quickly wheeled her back to the trauma room. We put her up on the gurney in the trauma room, and full resuscitation efforts are immediately started. I started an IV on her, and then after everything was underway resuscitation wise, one of the nurses said, you know, all of us have come in here and none of us, or nobody's out with the rest of the patients. So I said, all right, I'll go back out, because all of us just went running into the trauma room, and we didn't realize that nobody had stayed with the other patients. So I said, okay, I'll go back out. When I did, the desk clerk walked up to me and said, Jeffrey Feiger's out front. This is a carbon monoxide inhalation. So I went back in and told the doctor, and it turns out that this was one of Dr. Kevorkian's patients. So.
Did she come back?
No. Oh. No, she had breathed in the carbon monoxide before they brought her in. This was a planned assisted suicide.
Sure.
So that shed a new light on the situation very quickly. Later, since it was midnight, later that morning, in front of the emergency room, there was two news trucks from two of the local Detroit local news stations.
Right.
And around 6 o'clock in the morning, you could go back into the break room, and there was a television up on the wall, and you could turn on two of the stations and see a live shot of the emergency room on either of those stations. And they kept, you know, periodically saying, you know, another of Dr. Kevorkian's patients were brought into this hospital last night.
Oh, yikes.
That's why we're showing them.
Wow.
Showing a live shot of the front of the ER.
So, oh, my gosh. Talk about the different levels of, I'm not sure what the correct term is, but the EMT, the paramedic, talk mm-hmm. about some of the different levels that people go through to become a paramedic.
Okay, well, there's four levels of EMS licensure. The first one is medical first responder. That person can do bandaging, vital signs, administer oxygen, do CPR, but they're not licensed to transport a patient. Right?
Oh.
The next step above that is basic emergency medical technician. Okay, they can do everything I just mentioned, splinting, bandaging, putting patients on backboards. They can transport a patient. The next level above that is advanced emergency medical technician, which does everything that a basic emergency medical technician does, plus start IVs. And they've recently changed the regulations here in Michigan, so there are some medications that an advanced EMT now administers.
Okay.
And then they can also do the defibrillation with the automatic external defibrillator.
Mm-hmm.
And the final step above that is paramedic. Paramedic administers more medications in addition to what the advanced EMT can administer. They do the advanced airway care, where we can put tubes down into the person's airway to breathe for them.
Okay.
That's called intubation, endotracheal
mm-hmm.
tube.
Mm-hmm.
Paramedic can also do defibrillating without the automatic machine, making the looking at the cardiac monitor and determining that the person needs to be defibrillating, deciding that on their own and defibrillating the patient. We can also externally pace someone.
Mm-hmm.
We can also run the 12 EDKGs and interpret those. It's okay. A step-by-step process where you build from one level to the next.
Right. Now, you're working inside the rig, and you mentioned that when you took the lady inside the hospital, mm-hmm. Dr. Kevorkian's patient, if you will.
No, I didn't. I didn't take her in. Somebody else brought her in. I was working in the emergency room at that time.
Okay. Oh, I got it. Okay. Are you able to leave the vehicle and go into the hospital? Or is that where your role stops?
No, we when we're transporting a patient, we take them out of the ambulance and wheel them into the
okay.
hospital, and
right.
the ambulance stays outside.
Okay, and you can actually help with some of the care if needed?
If they need us to do that, yes.
Okay.
Yes. Oh yeah.
All right.
Yeah. If the hospital staff requests our assistance, we will help them.
Okay. All right. Okay. I didn't know if you were limited.
No.
Okay.
No, we can
all
do
right.
whatever they need us to do to help them. Once we turn the patient over to the hospital staff, it's their patient now.
Mm-hmm.
So they make that decision.
Mm-hmm.
Do we want your help, or are we going to take it from here?
All right. Well, Ken, you have a very exciting life. I mean, it's amazing. Every day is different. That's a given.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so you've been at this for over 30 years and
34 years.
30, yeah. So you're happy with what you're doing, obviously. Any parting thoughts, any stories or anything you'd like to share at the end?
Everybody should know CPR. Go to your American Red Cross or your American Heart Association and take a class. Everybody
okay.
should know CPR.
Okay.
So
take care of your heart on this Valentine's Day.
Oh yes, take care of your heart. Watch your weight. Watch your blood pressure. See your doctor at least once a year for a regular checkup. Try not to eat too many foods that are high in fat or high in cholesterol.
Yeah, but wine and chocolate and all that kind of thing is okay today.
Well, this is one day a year.
Okay.
One day a year. One day a year isn't going to hurt. But if you too much during the entire year can be a problem. But
too much of a good thing.
One day out of the year is probably
okay.
Okay.
Well, chocolate's supposed to be good for your heart. So if it's the dark, yeah.
I don't know what the cardiologist would have to say about that. I'd have to ask them.
Well, Ken, thank you so much for being here today with Impact. And thank you to everyone for listening to Impact, the show about individuals and groups making a positive difference in the community. The views and opinions expressed on Impact are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio nor Henry Ford College. And I wish everyone listening a happy Valentine's Day. This is WHFR Dearborn.